This is a Gathering History Project podcast recorded in the Louth County Museum in Dundalk, Ireland.
When we talk about entertainment in Dundalk, the first two people you'd nearly think about in different aspects of entertainment, of course, and I'm delighted that they're both here with me this morning. Joe Martin. Joe, you're very, very welcome. And Tony O'Kane. Tony, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Harry.
And the only thing, we are lucky that Ireland didn't qualify for the World Cup, because if they did, Tony O'Kane would be in South Africa. Tony, was it disappointing to you that they didn't qualify?
It was terribly disappointing, because I went to France for the playoff match and it was heartbreaking. It took me months literally to get over it. The disappointment. I was just reading one of the reports there from Gallus, the French player, stating that he feels really gutted for Ireland not being at the World Cup. He feels we deserved, over the two legs, we deserved to be there. But, que sera, sera. It's water under the bridge now.
How did you feel watching France the other night?
Well, I saw Thierry Henry appealing for a handball at one stage. I thought that was unreal, but... However, we'll get over our disappointment.
Yeah, and talking about football, of course, we have to mention Joe, of course, played for years with Dundalk Soccer Football Club. And Joe, it was part of a whole lot of your life in your younger days, wasn't it?
I grew up with football, actually. First, I was at the first game in Oriel Park with my grandfather. I think it was 1937 it opened. And I don't be in it any longer, I'm too old to go up. But no, football was my life in my early days. Played for up in 10 years with Dundalk. And believe it or not, Harry, I'm the highest goal scorer still alive. 109 goals with Dundalk between 1949 and 1959.
Did you know that, Tony?
I think there was no offside at that time.
I don't think there was any goalkeeper.
Certainly the wrong man in jerseys.
But I know that Joe is very, very well thought of within the football industry. When we talk about entertainment, I mean, Dundalk has a great reputation for entertainment, hasn't it? All sorts of entertainment. But like soccer and football, let's put it this way, be it Gaelic or any kind of sport, is entertainment anyway. But the minute you think of entertainment, you're inclined to think about show bands or about the town hall theatre or about cinemas and everything like that. But Tony, sport is a huge part of entertainment in Dundalk over the years.
Absolutely, we're a massive soccer town, because no matter where you would go in Ireland, I travel to any of the remotest parts, and people that may not be associated with soccer football, if you mention Dundalk, they'll always mention the soccer club.
Right, now, other than the entertainment of sport and athletics down in the athletic ground, Tony, what is the first thing other than that that you remember about entertainment in the athletic grounds? What's the first thing that comes into your head?
The carnival.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I was hoping you'd say
well,
that.
Well, we lived in close proximity, been from Chapel Street, so...
Of course. And, it was unbelievable.
Unreal. And I went to school in the CBS, and so we had all the sports days there. We played all our football matches there. It was a magnificent ground, and it was terribly sad to see the demise of it. Yeah.
Tell us about the carnival, because the young people, we see it up there at Hill Street now, at Hill Street Bridge, with they come there and they throw a few wheels and everything up. But this was huge stuff, wasn't it?
Absolutely massive, because at that time it was packed practically every night.
Yeah.
And I remember we were mesmerised. These two guys, they used to jump on broken bottles as part of the act. And one night we managed to lift a few of the broken bottles to try it ourselves at home in the garden. But we discovered that the glass was completely frozen. All the edges were frozen off it. So you could jump away to your heart's content. And they had burning coals, you know.
Yeah.
And the same with the coals. We lit the coals and tried it with our hand. But they were flame retardant. They wouldn't burn you.
Yeah, the other thing with the carnival, Harry, was Cyclone Danny. Remember him, no? Cyclone Danny, it was a motorbike, and he'd go right round.
The Wall of Death, yeah.
The Wall of Death, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And there was another man who used to climb about 100 yards up in the air, and dive into a tank. He'd light himself up in flames and dive into a water tank. And the most famous one of all was the fortune teller. I went into him when I was about 16, when I was beginning to chase women, and I give him this threepence, I think it was, and he says, "La la hooey hooey, girl in fair hair, think of you, lucky number 7.
The carnival. Where there was now Park Street, where it's now where what is it? Where the Argus office is?
Yeah, round just face Milagros.
Yeah, now that was another dive, to say the least. I mean, it wasn't a very nice place, was it, John?
Well, you could go into it, Harry, and if you were sitting in the pit down at the bottom, yes, you'd swim. Have to swim out.
Yeah. Well, let's just tell. How can we, I'm not even going to allow Joe to try and explain this, but there was one toilet in it. And when you would go in the door, the toilet was into
to the left,
yeah. And there was, it was slanted.
Well, there's a slope yeah. on it, yeah.
So you couldn't get into the toilet because it only really hold one person. So everyone, well, I'm not saying everyone, but a lot of people peed in it up at the back. And the urine used to flow right down to the bottom, you know. But there was good times in it too, because Christmas time, and particularly St. Stephen's Day, what did they give? A free orange.
A free orange. And what picture was on every St. Stephen's Day?
Go
for
on.
About 15 years. King Kong. The old King Kong, yeah. That was on every St. Stephen's Day.
Now, that was, of course, that particular cinema was only cinemas. There was nothing else in it. The Dominican Hall.
Oh, there was, Harry.
What? Park Street?
There was a question time in early 40s. A famous RTE commentator, Niall Bowden, came down and had a question time and talent contest in Park Street.
Did they really?
Yes,
I never knew that. Yeah. Now. And what did it do? Just put it in front of the screen?
Just in front of the screen. And my sister Kitty was playing, and the late Kevin Barry. Never Kevin? Kevin,
indeed.
He died only a month ago. And his song was, "Is a memory I have, shipmates of mine. Sim, tell me, where do you want the shipmates of mine?" And I called them shipmates of mine for 40, 50 years after.
Now, you learn something new every day. Well, of course, the big one before we go to the big one, let's go to the Magnet one.
Magnet.
Now, the Magnet, you're not going to tell me you used to have other stuff on there.
Oh, yes, of course.
I can't remember that, Joe. We couldn't afford to go to it.
You were poor, Harry. I was very poor. I used to sell porta bottles to get the money to go to the pictures. There was a few, before my time, in the 30s, there would be musical societies and things like that would use the Magnet. It was called the Parochial Hall at the time, actually. The clergy owned that hall. But the most famous entertainer that ever appeared outside the Magnet was who? Margaret Barry, playing the banjo. I never more roam to me, little home, Tipperary so far.
Well,
away.
It's an awful pity now that I have my helicopter with me today, because I could have gone home and taken in a CD of Margaret Barry. Yeah. Which, but a huge part towards I won't say the end of your tenure in it, but was the Maytime Festival. I mean, it was huge for 40 years. It was, talk about entertainment, I mean, it was really huge, wasn't it?
Absolutely brilliant. I remember with the band, with Bernie Bingham, we had a band called Spectrum. We did 10 nights when the Festival Club was in the Imperial Hotel. We did every night there in the Festival Club. But it was a magnificent festival, and the crowds it brought to town and the entertainment value was just second to none. And it's shameful that it has been neglected and it has died.
Joe, I know you weren't, Joe, involved in the festival as much as an awful lot, and I know Joe an awful long time. And
I was a judge once, Harry.
Yeah.
I was a judge in a talent contest, and it turned out to be the pub drama. And lucky enough, your man from Jim, famous actor.
Jim Craven. Oh yeah, Jim.
Was up the up the Dublin Road in that pub in beside the hospital. What do you call it? My head's gone. You see, I'm nearly 80.
But the Martyrs.
I had to judge a pub drama, and Jim would be a father relation of mine. He says, "Now, Judge, you see, I hope you get this right." Before the judging started at all, and luckily enough, there was only one play on. So I had no problem judging. I was supposed to be a singing pub I was judging. But it turned out, I never got paid for that yet, that judging competition. I must say about that.
Well, listen, the minute you mention pub drama, let's go back to Tony, because Tony, the pub drama in the century was huge, wasn't it?
Absolutely second to none. It was brilliant, because we had a very big beer garden at the back of the pub, and we erected a marquee every year for the festival. We had both bands and drama in it, but the pub drama, the rehearsals would take place maybe about 10 weeks before the
took
actual,
this very serious.
Oh, they did. Unfortunately, they used to run huge bar bills that came out of the kitty at the end.
And
more often than not, it finished up where they owed me money. But it was fantastic, yeah. The Gabriel Donoghue used to write the plays, and you had Beaver McKeever, Jerry Duffy, Jim Brady.
Chris is some great actor.
Absolutely. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And they put absolutely a massive amount of time into it, costume-wise, and it was hilarious.
Tony, isn't it very hard to explain, or even talking the way we are talking now, to younger people about the festival in those days? You know, I was very much involved in the drama end of it, like the administration end of it. And I used to take my 2 weeks' holidays off to actually look after the box office for them. But it was like going on holidays. The whole atmosphere in the town for anyone involved in it was unbelievable.
The town was just alive. There was you'd be looking at the festival programme each night to see what you were going to go to. Especially the early years where you had the tug of war and donkey racing in the Maris ground. And it was the open air talent competitions on the streets. They went from Bridge Street to Church Street to the square. Absolutely fantastic.
As I'm sitting here looking out, it's a beautiful, beautiful day again. The sun's back again, and it's really, really... I'm sure if I was a real smart DJ, I would be able to come up with something, but it's a lovely sunny afternoon outside, and over to you, Tony.
Well, thanks, Harry, for having me, and I think Joe's going to help me with the backing vocals here. It's another one of my all-time favourite songwriters, Ray Davies, and the song's appropriate for the afternoon we're having here, sunny afternoon.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Oh, the tax man's taking all my dough, left me in my stately home, blazing on a sunny afternoon. And I can't sail my yacht, he's taken everything I've got. All I've got's a sunny afternoon. Save me, save me, save me from a squeeze. Got a big fat mama trying to break me. And I love to live so pleasantly, live this life of luxury, lazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime, in the summertime,
in the summertime.
Well, my girlfriend's run off with my car, she's gone back to her ma and pa. She's telling tales of drunkenness and cruelty, but now I'm sitting here sipping at my ice cold beer. All I've got's a sunny afternoon. Help me, help me, help me sail away. Oh, give me two good reasons why I ought to stay. 'Cause I love to live so pleasantly.
Help us make history by visiting our website on www.gatheringhistory.com.